welcome to another episode of the Right Side Podcast. I'm Andrea here, and not this week. Kim is out, but I am here as usual. And with me this week is Sarah Quinlan from ARC Digital. How are you, Sarah?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you for filling in for Kim.
No problem. Happy to be here.
Yeah. So we'll have 2 weeks while Kim's out, but then she'll be back, hopefully. But everybody, in the meantime, if you can go and leave a review of this podcast and tell us if you like it. And as always, we love 5 stars because that's our favorite number. And if Kim was here, she would agree with me. So, no, but as well as Sarah's here, she's been a guest before for us, but we do have, said Sarah is filling in as co-host. I was like, well, we should at least have another person that's an actual guest that we can say is a guest so that it's not, I mean, I'm sure Sarah and I could probably talk for a long time, but we have from the Bulwark, Jim Swift. How are you?
Ahoy. You know, if you give 3 stars on a podcast rating, that means you're a supporter of General Flynn.
Oh, wow. Yes. So we definitely need 5 stars. So, yes. Yeah. So I'm, and you know, it's like, we're getting ready for like all this Easter and everything like that. And so it's too bad. It's not like 5, at least it's not 5 eggs. Cause then it'd look like, you know, bad Twitter accounts. So Sarah, I kind of like, you know, it's like having new topics and things like that. It's always fun to have kind of you know, I'm sure that when Kim does this without me, that, you know, it's like, oh, there's new topics that we can cover. So you actually came up with something that you wanted to talk about that we hadn't touched on. I was kind of thinking about it when you brought it up, but, you know, we did talk about the Christchurch shooting, on here a couple weeks ago when it happened. But, do you want to talk really quick about like just kind of your takeaway and what you wanted to talk about?
Sure. I have been having these discussions with a lot of people lately about the best way to cover incidents like the New Zealand shooting, and the thought process and rhetoric behind it. Here it was basically like white nationalism, and just been trying to figure out. I used to always believe that the best disinfectant for things like this was sunlight, drawing attention to it, you know, calling it out, pointing it out, why it's bad. And lately, I don't know the best way anymore. I don't know if there is a responsible way to cover things like the shooting in New Zealand. You brought up a good point that the media does seem to have been doing a better job with these shootings, where like they don't say the shooters' names, or kind of make them famous. Like, what was the incident a few years ago where, like, I think Rolling Stone put someone on the cover?
Oh, that was the Boston bomber. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so there's definitely, I think, been a difference in how they've been covering it. But I just don't know the best and most responsible way to cover things like this. And if by trying to, you know, disinfect it with sunlight, are you actually increasing the platform, drawing more eyes, and maybe, you know, spreading that that mindset? And so I just don't know what the best way to do it, to handle it anymore is.
Yeah. So Jim, you've been through many of these as well, and especially as part of, you know, kind of the commentariat and media. Do you think that there is a kind of getting better, quote unquote, getting better at it on coverage part? Is it because it was in New Zealand that they maybe clamped? The first time I read the guy's name was today in an Atlantic article. Hmm. So
I know it still.
I paid pretty close attention to it because my parents were in Christchurch when that happened. It was just, they happened to be on a cruise and they were there. And, you know, the incidents where the terrorism occurred were not like touristy places, but still, you know, I've never been to New Zealand. I don't know that. So I paid a particular amount of attention to it. I do think that the media has gotten generally better about it. I mean, I also come at this from like the old Hill standpoint. Like, whenever crazy people would come to Capitol Hill with guns or stuff, everyone always wanted to know everything about them because, mm-hmm. you know, there was this weird camaraderie to basically working at like a target for crazy people. And, you know, you wanted to see like, oh, whose office had this person in the constituent file and that kind of stuff. I know that sounds kind of morbid. That's just how we thought. I think where we've gotten worse, we've gotten better in general. I agree with you, Sarah. But where I think we've gotten worse is with the increased politicization of things. If there is any reason to suspect that an alleged shooter or bomber or stabber or, you know, blanker has political motivations, which in terrorism, there's pretty much always a political motivation. But in the terms of hate crimes and whatnot, you'll see that that breaks down a little bit, I think. And people are eager to exploit motivations. And I'm not sure that's ever going to go away. Nor are like the videos and things, you know, given the dark internet and whatnot. But the good news is, I think, you know, you're not seeing, you know, instant replays of things, you know, like the shooter down in Southern Virginia who shot up his old coworkers at the news station.
Right.
I just went to what I thought was a site, and lo and behold, like, they had embedded the video, and that's a video I wish I had never watched. And stopped the second I realized what I was watching. Yeah, we're never truly going to get rid of it. But I think in general, it's gotten better. A rising tide lifts all boats. But, you know, the kind of partisan bad actors who want to be like, he was a right winger, he was a left winger. You know, they're always going to be around.
Yeah, I read an interesting article this morning in The Atlantic. I think it was like Graham Wood that wrote it, and he was basically talking about, you know, that it seemed like in the past that he took a quote from a New York Times article that was done right after an Islamic terrorist incident. I don't remember which one, but he kind of just flipped the wording around and made it be about that it was about the Christchurch shooter. And he was like, look, you know, you have crazy people, they have crazy ideologies, and you kind of, and it was basically making the case that there is, you know, ideology on some level involved in these things. And what was really disturbing about the Christchurch shooter is just how much he kind of had the media's number, I guess, on leaving that weird manifesto. And it is tragic, and I'm so glad that, you know, other than the one, you know, dumb politician in New Zealand, that, or was it New Zealand or Australia? But you know, the rest of the country seemed to have, you know, kind of had some appropriate responses as well, as to just kind of be like sympathetic and like, hey, this is not how we're supposed to be. To be doing this. But and I of course was watching all the hot takes on you know, American media, which, you know, there's never too few of those. I mean, there's always too many, but there's never a lack of them. But so we can kind of move on to other things. But the media kind of in America, at least, and it's very like, I mean, it's probably people that listen to this podcast type of social media, which is very, you know, centric on kind of right-wing commentary and things like that. But so we had a, you know, issue over the last couple of days where, you know, first something started out as a meme where, you know, one person that went to, I don't know, should we say names? I guess like Meghan McCain's, you know, had someone at her wedding. She had a very small wedding for those types of things. I mean, it did get covered by People, but as far as like, you know, what you would normally expect from political weddings, she had a fairly small and quickly, you know, done one because her father was passing away. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, she kind of got catty on Denise McAllister did, and on Cat about calling Megan's The View co-hosts midget minded, I guess, and kind of lashed out at them. And the photo had the attached, you know, article was Megan, and it just kind of struck everyone a little bit odd at the time that, you know, Denise has a senior contributor and written for The Federalist, which Ben started years ago, almost a decade ago, and that she would do this. Well, then Meghan McCain clapped back with, "You were at my wedding, Denise." That all became a meme, and it all seemed lighthearted and like it was just going to be a little bit brushed under the rug. Then came the selling of T-shirts by Denise and kind of taking a dig at calling Meghan spoiled on the T-shirt selling website. And then, Sarah, you want to kind of like, I'm going to totally butcher this, and I know Jay tells me that I tell stories horribly, but, which I probably am really like ham-fisting telling the story. But then the last 2 days, it kind of went to a whole other level. Do you kind of want to jump in? And because you, I think, have been on Twitter more this weekend, not as a slight, I'm just saying you've probably seen it more of it.
Yeah, I want to say I think it started with Denise or DC tweeting about a March Madness game and how her husband was watching a game, Carolina, I think, and she tried to speak to him during it, and he kind of shut her down saying, like, you know, the game is on, like, we don't talk when the game is on. And in her tweet, she wrote, "He's right, I slipped." And then she went on to say something about, like, once commercial came around, she went and got him a beer. And then since it was commercial, he, you know, gave her more attention. And they, I think she wrote, like, deep kisses, like, timing and patience, ladies. Like, that's the lesson here. Like, insinuating, like, know when to talk to your husband, I guess.
It was kind of one of those "what are Saturdays for? The boys" tweets, but from a woman, you know, to her audience, because this is a big issue for her. She writes a lot about the threats, real or perceived, towards, you know, public expressions of masculinity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also as a relation, and she kind of styles herself as a conservative women relationship expert, I guess.
And then, the problem is I always read things in my head, so I don't know if I'm pronouncing it correctly, but Yashar.
Yeah, that's probably right.
Who is like a freelance reporter and pretty well respected on from both sides. He does a pretty good job, I think, of calling balls and strikes from both sides. Just screenshotted the tweet saying, quoting the line, "He's right, I slipped." And then I think he said something like, "Oh, Denise," with like a sad face. And
very innocuous.
Kind of got the ball rolling. Denise, I guess, saw the tweet and responded back to it, and did so in a pretty gross way. Because Yashar is gay, she made a reference to him, I think, like, not knowing who he is as an individual, as a human being, not appreciating masculinity or something like that. And then topped it off with a pretty gross comment about him finding himself in another man's part of the body.
Yeah, it was all fairly vulgar, and she subsequently got, you know, it's clearly, I mean, she's been let go from the Federalist, I think, you know, and
Daily Wire.
And the Daily Wire, yeah. So just as, I mean, Jim, I'd love to hear, like, again, your thought. I mean, I kind of took it as a...
I'm just glad to no longer be enemy number one.
Yeah. I kind of took it as a... her tweet, like, I saw her tweet. I was somebody... Actually, Kim sent me a screenshot of the tweet. And I kind of, like, took that and was just like, oh, man. Like really, we've got to go to that. And again, I took it as more of a... My main issue... I mean, yes, I think... this isn't an aside. This is what I think. What she did was vulgar, and she got her comeuppance. I think that there's, you know, appropriate response for reacting to someone being that vulgar towards someone who hasn't done anything to you, like physically violent or anything like that. And she did try to pass it off as like, hey, I've been called this kind of thing. I've been called this. It's like, okay, but that doesn't give you permission to then go and do it to someone else. But again, like I said, where she was, I worry that girls, young women, conservative women look at these types of conversations. And she later followed up and said, well, we were joking. I'm like, okay, but there are women who do live in households where that there is, you know, not a joking reality there. Whether or not that's Denise's problem to deal with that head on. It's at the same time, it was just the, to me, the tweet came off as very gross. And why would you be in a relationship with someone that actually said that? And if it was a joke, why would you not say that? And you've got 280 characters. She hadn't used that many. Be very clear, especially when you are kind of taking yourself seriously as a relationship, how to, you know, traditional male female role relationship wise. That was my big thing. The rest of it was just I don't want to say unforgivable, but wow. So, but Jim.
So outrage mobs, good, bad, or it's not a binary choice? Because it seems to be changing from week to week.
Yeah.
I think when someone doubles down on what the, like, there is no, you know, like, Ben House said on Twitter earlier, I just happened to see his tweet. Like, he was talking about how, you know, he said stupid things online, and when people, and he goes, it's not a piling on. When someone is doubling down and won't apologize, and, you know, doesn't say like, oh, I said something stupid, I shouldn't have said that. It's not a piling on when that person then says, no, I'm doing everything right. And she, you know, when she talked about the DM that she got into, that, you know, that Ben Shapiro sent her, saying that she was no longer welcome to write at the Daily Wire. And she said, well, you can't fire me, I quit, type of thing. She's asking, you know, not asking for a piling on, but she's perpetuating the thing going on and on and on. So if you're, you know, should people have to, you know, like the whole Tucker thing about apologizing, I'm not going to apologize. Same thing with a lot of things that we're seeing nowadays, that it's toxic to kind of put this kind of stuff out there and then whine, you know, complain about it or even perpetuate it, just continue it on. So outrage mobs inappropriate, like, I don't know. I've never been a part of an outrage mob, I don't think.
An angry mob fun run. I mean, I think it's worth taking a step back just to observe that, you know, this behavior, and someone was joking, and I thought in a funny way, perhaps a little cruel, saying that I was at your meltdown, Denise, on Twitter last night. This type of behavior from her, this is not an anomaly. This sort of phallic-centric insults, you know, past 8 o'clock. You know, I've seen it happen more than half a dozen times before I was blocked, and I don't even know why I was blocked. I'm sure I earned it. But you know, she directed this at people that, you know, used to be close to her too on the internet, who quickly turned on her for this. So, I mean, I think it is worth observing that in terms of like the angry mob fun running with, this was not just like, you know, has Denise landed yet? This was Denise being Denise sort of on the regular. And now we're in this position where, you know, I would say that the Federalist is a little bit more adventurous in what they're willing to publish than the Daily Wire is. I think the Daily Wire probably is a little bit more, and it's not to say they've never screwed up or people don't always screw up, but you know, it's kind of part of their brand. But these places are foreclosed to her now, and you know, it might not actually be, I know here's Jim's counterintuitive take, might not actually be bad for her. She'll probably end up with a Patreon and shows on PragerU and you know, like Too Hot for the Federalist, you know. There is an audience for people who think that the Daily Wire and the Federalist are too mainstream. You know, questions whether she'll be able to make it work, because believe me, we haven't heard the last of her. I mean, pundits never just go quietly into that good night.
No.
Yeah.
Sarah, any?
I have like a million thoughts running through my head. You guys are making really good points. I did really like Ben's tweets about it, because I know I've been in circumstances, not even on Twitter, but in real life, where I've said things that I regretted. And like,
which Ben? Is Howe, Shapiro, or Dominic?
Okay, Ben Howe. Oh, yeah, there are a lot of Bens. Yeah, right there. And so I do think I know how much it meant to me when people forgave me for things I regretted or that I said poorly, but like Jim said with Denise, this isn't a pattern. This isn't something she just said poorly. She has said horrible things ever since I first became aware of her existence. I don't know when that was. And I'm surprised that it took to this point for these publications to cut her loose. So, I mean, I hope, you know, I hope she learns from this and grows from this. And, I mean, yeah, it's hard.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of said the same thing to about, you know, that she's not going to be, you know, I don't think that this is really going to affect her bottom line in the long run, because we are kind of in this, you know, we're in the run up to 2020. There's things that are going to be, you know, if she walks the right line or whatever, then, you know, she can end up somewhere else. And I feel like I'm rambling at this point. Gosh.
I will say, regarding outrage mobs, I feel like I was kind of like you actually during this, Andrea, where I was kind of just watching while I was on Twitter, but not really participating on the public timeline. And it's hard to know when it's beneficial to jump in, and when, like, you're really just piling on someone who, like, just needs a break from Twitter and needs, like, an opportunity to think about her mindset, I guess. So I go back and forth on Twitter outrage mobs.
Yeah.
It's almost never constructive to weigh in. And I say that as someone who weighed in with glee about this, because I've long been anti DC McAllister. But S.E. Cup from CNN tried to weigh in and tried to basically take away her beer and offer her an opportunity, mm-hmm. you know, to get off of this road. I mean, I think the damage was largely done. And she did not take it. She just put the pedal to the floor. And so, I mean, I think that just kind of shows where, you know, unless you want to pick a side and, you know, probably meaninglessly opine on Twitter.com based on that side, there's almost no real value to doing it. And even if you try and not pick a side and try and be the role of peacemaker, you saw how S.E. Cup was treated, which is to say, mm-hmm. poorly.
Yeah, I mean, you guys can weigh into if you have, like, final thoughts on this, but, like, my other issue that I had was I saw someone going after Jim Antle, of all people, that he said something about, you know, sometimes when crazy people say crazy things, you should just ignore them. And somebody got up in his timeline about talking about how you shouldn't be calling people crazy, because it makes, you know, not dismissing like real meltdowns and mental breakdowns as just crazy, because it doesn't speak, you know, kindly. It diminishes. I do not think that this in any way was a mental meltdown on Denise's behalf. I think it was very poor behavior, but I don't think there was a someone that we used to work with at Red State who did have an actual, like, days long breakdown on Twitter and was going around, you know, preemptively blocking people who were her friends, you know, and it was very, and she does, she suffered with bipolar disorder. It was a, you know, one of the, I think probably, I don't know if it was a manic or depressive thing, but it was very much a real life breakdown where people were really needing her, you know, we have to get you some help. And it was not, and her husband had to get involved and good friends. But that is real breakdown.
That's the tough part about Twitter, is people don't know.
Yep.
You know, the people who are party to this in real life. Now, I don't think any of us know DC in real life, but we kind of know her shtick. I mean, we knew that wasn't abnormal. Yeah, when it comes to this kind of stuff, I mean, when you know someone, that is where you do it. But, you know, you're probably not best suited to doing it online when you know someone like that. But, you know, it's hard to get someone off the phone when, you know, I mean, Twitter's, Jonathan Last, who's my boss, is off Twitter for Len, and I'm running his account. And, you know, he's just like, Twitter's awful. We should all be off of Twitter. And he's right. But,
it does,
you know,
bring out the worst in us.
Yeah, yes. You know, notably John Podhoretz of Commentary. I mean, he was known for going off Twitter, getting back on, going off Twitter. But he actually, you know, went to, you know, onto Facebook and said, I actually deleted my account. I never want to go back there. And he actually said the words, and this is something coming from a, you know, a religious oriented guy like he is saying, he goes, I actually think there's something evil about it. And it's like, I was like, whoa, that's kind of like, you know, I don't know if I'm, you know, ready to go all the way there, but if that's how it's affecting you in your life, that makes you, you know, that you feel that it's like, okay, well then that's something that, you know, you definitely should be looking at. And so
of course he's back on Twitter.
Is he back on Twitter?
Yeah. No, I mean, you're right. He has done this on again, off again thing. But, you know, it's good to realize, you know, what Twitter does to you. And I've thought about this a lot since I have no shortage of controversial tweets, you know, not on DC McAllister's level. But, you know, with some of the same audiences, you know, it kind of occurred to me that, like, you know, flipping through this late at night, you know, on your phone when you could be sleeping or playing with your dog or watching your kids, you know, hopefully they would be asleep. You know, you got better ways to spend your life. And, you know, it's a valuable news source. It's a valuable way to make friends. Without Twitter, I probably wouldn't know either of you. So it's not right. All bad.
Yeah, but I don't think Sarah and I would know our prospective spouses if we didn't have Twitter. Yeah, I wouldn't either.
Nope.
So yeah, not all bad, but you know, I think everyone has to grapple with, you know, every new thing changes you, to what degree, and is it good or bad? And it's almost always bad with Twitter, but you know, in the case of Pod, he's a very nice guy, but you know, you just see him kind of blow up on Twitter from time to time, and then he deletes it, and then he comes back and rinses and repeats. You know, it's good that people find that out. I mean, I've dedicated a lot less time to Twitter. I'm still just as bad, but in more concentrated doses.
So,
I think actually the Bulwark had a good piece about, and this is not really PC related. Yeah.
On Twitter. Yeah.
Yeah. About, like, what if the Twitter you is the real you? Because so often, again, this is not related to DC. This is other people in general on Twitter. People kind of brush off like gross comments by people like being like, oh, it's just an act. That's not who he is in real life. Like, he's a really nice person. And I am starting to get to the point where like who you are on Twitter is the same person you are in real life. Like, the real life version of you is going to your computer, going to your phone and typing those things and sending them off into Twitter. Like, I don't understand why we separate who someone is on Twitter and who they are offline. And if it's that easy for someone to treat someone poorly or talk down to people or say racist or sexist or homophobic things online, and the only reason they don't do it in person is because they're face to face with someone, like, what does that say about the kind of person they are?
Right, because you have to sit there and type it out and then press send. It's like, yeah. I would kind of say that at least my conflict avoidant personality type is very, you know, the same on Twitter. I don't sit there and get into, I probably get into more arguments on,
I think you're
real
very
life.
Much the same person you are in real life.
Andrea, you'll appreciate this. I was telling Jonathan that I was trying to get DC to write why I quit the dailywire.com for the Bulwark. Cause that's part of our genre, right?
Oh, Lord.
Yeah, right. It's very much a part of your genre.
Bad jokes.
So the last thing that we can discuss that we kind of went over this in previous weeks with, but we've had further developments on this. So Jussie Smollett is not facing any charges at this point, and he kind of like got Rahm Emanuel back up. The entire Chicago PD is all pissed off. They actually, you know, shocked a lot of Chicagoans. And when you can kind of shock Chicagoans with the level of, you know, what's being perceived, at least through, you know, the media and stuff like that, as some level of corruption, it's something to kind of sit back and say, huh, they actually like punked them. So any thoughts on the entire, like, you guys haven't been here to kind of discuss the backstory, but anything from the past? What I found interesting is that with everything that we heard, and everything that Jussie Smollett said, that he, you know, went from the, it was white women to they shouted, it was, it, this is Trump country. All of that was back before, you know, kind of the, shit hit the fan for Smollett, but he came out and is now trying to almost change what he said again in the past and saying, I wouldn't be my mother's son if any of these things were true. And it's like, but you already said that, you know, it's like, we already know that at least half your story isn't true.
I was shocked that how quickly, and you know, and you know, the joke on the in the kind of Trump skeptic circles was like, "Oh, Jussie Smollett totally exonerated, right, guys?" You know, to kind of poke fun at the folks who are going along with the total exoneration line before we've even seen the Mueller report. But what I was struck by was how quickly the Chicago Police Department, which has its own, you know, corrupt backstories, released the FOIA file on all the Jussie Smollett stuff, because apparently the case was going to be sealed. Mm-hmm. And someone like preemptively filed a FOIA.
Oh,
and
I didn't know that.
Like right when it went down, it was like, boop, here's the file. and I downloaded it, but I didn't really flip through it. But, you know, it was just kind of interesting. So clearly you could take that as a sign that the police were not happy about the way the prosecutor's office or the DA's office acted.
Yeah, I listened to, for anybody wanting to, this past weekend, I listened to one of the Adam Carolla digital podcasts is one that he does with Mark Garagus, whose firm was actually involved in the Jussie Smollett case. But they did their podcast release every Saturday. So I'm only about halfway through the podcast at this point. But of course, it's a lot of Mark Garagus typical kind of, you know, playing defense attorney. And of course, he was involved in the whole thing. So, he, you know, he, but he's sitting there talking about, but, you know, they're, he says that, and I'm just going to say this because I'm just saying he says, and so I'm just relaying it, but like he said that the, you know, the Rahm Emanuel, you know, with the election coming up, they wanted that Rahm Emanuel tried to get out in front of the election that was coming up on the following Tuesday. And the police chief is, you know, put into office by the mayor of Chicago. So apparently like, so the defense side is saying, well, actually it was, you know, Rahm Emanuel playing, you know, footsies with, and it was, it's all one of those very Chicago in type of things where you're like, okay, so everyone's a bad guy. Like you don't know who really did anyways, but that, so that's an interesting, you know, an interesting aside, if you're interested in hearing, you know, kind of the spin that the defense side kind of put on things. When we've, you know, because we get all of the, what the media wanted to hear, what it wanted to say about it. And I do think that there was Jussie Smollett, I don't think should have been had all of his. I mean, I'm not a lawyer, but I play one on TV, or I play one on this podcast right now. But yeah, it was rather shocking, and the amount of money that was placed on it, and the fact that, you know, at least no one got hurt when you know, when if you were going to start something with, you know, Trump, you know, people,
MAGA,
you know,
country,
yeah, the MAGA country. What's funny to me is that for about 12 hours, Rahm Emanuel was quote a conservative. You know, it's like, they're like, oh, Rahm Emanuel's a conservative now, because everybody was like, oh yeah, he's, you know, Rahm Emanuel's, you know, ticked off about this. And
Joe Cunningham joked that he had jumped to the front of like Bulwark 2020 presidential candidates.
it was funny because I think like in that same interview, but it was later in the interview that Rahm Emanuel came out and said, look, I've already said this Chicago is a no Trump city. Like it was like immediate, like, you know, back to reality. So anyways, I thought that was, Sarah, did you
now,
have,
would you guys, oh, would you guys listen to, sorry to jump in like the evil man here. patience and timing, ladies. That's the lesson.
God.
But would you guys listen to like a 13 part NPR episode podcast about the Jussie Smollett story? Because I think I would.
Yeah, I mean, I listened to eight episode podcasts about, you know, there's this podcast called The Breakdown, and it's just the court reporter from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution talking about cases he's covered. So I would absolutely listen to something like that for sure, probably like Serial or something like that doing it. But Sarah, you have been quiet on this. Is this, do you have like lots or nothing to say about it. I feel bad. I'm not putting her on the spot, but I'm just like, I'm like, oh, either she's like afraid to say what she thinks, which I will get it out of you.
No. I actually, when you brought it up, I was thinking about, I saw that Patrick Frey or Paterico.
Patrick Frey. Yeah. Paterico. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He wrote a piece for ARC about it, ARC Digital. And that I really enjoyed reading because it was more fact-based as opposed to like,
speculative.
I don't know. Yeah. Honestly, I've had a difficult time following this just because I don't understand it. Like, I don't understand what possesses someone to like create this hoax. I don't understand why, they're dropping the charges. Like, Cook County is like notoriously corrupt, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so
that's why they call it Crook County.
Yeah, so I'm just hoping that we continue to get more information that lets us know really like what happened here, because it's not a good look. But I have been enjoying people comparing it to the Mueller report. And
oh gosh, really? What is that about?
I think Jim touched on it earlier, just people being like, just because they didn't find him guilty doesn't mean that he's not guilty. Isn't that it, Jim?
Yeah, well, it was just, you know, at the time, it was, you know, claiming exoneration without, you know, any of like the real details, you know, which we're still waiting on in the Mueller probe. But, it, you know, it was just, I think, a little bit of a troll. But also, I think there was a kernel of truth to it, too. I mean, the two aren't directly comparable, but the way how some of the very same people are saying, well, I mean, clearly Trump's exonerated. And then they're also saying, like, this is a miscarriage of justice. You know, it's just what's the old saying? The definition of genius is the ability to hold two competing ideas in one's head or something like that. I'm not sure this was exactly that test case, but, you know, everything is its reductio ab trollum.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We live in the age of trolling. I actually, ARC also had an article last week, and it was about Star Wars and trolling, kind of like the Sunny Bunch thing. Yeah. The Empire's actually the good guys here. Cause you've got these insurgent, you know, it's kind of also the idea that, what is it that, Daniel in Karate Kid is actually the bad guy. But,
hey, I don't know if I've ever seen Karate Kid.
Oh my God, Sarah, you're going to get ratioed. You might as well just go tweet that after this. And you know what? I totally forgot. I wanted to have you explain your love of the show Lost to me. I've never seen an episode of Lost, but I've heard about how awful it is. And I'm like, how can Sarah sit here and defend Lost, a notoriously bad TV show ending, at least, or bad last couple seasons? I'm like, she's sitting here like changing the narrative. She's rewriting history.
I could honestly talk about that so much because I was one of those people who thought it was bad. I watched it live. Like, I was a junior in college and I watched like the first 5 seasons on Netflix. I think that was kind of like the beginning of Netflix. And I remember binge watching it. Like, literally, I was home for winter break or spring break and just like watched it for like 16 hours a day. And then I watched the 6th season live. That was my senior year of college. And I remember being so angry at the finale. And because I didn't like the finale, it ruined the whole show for me. And then since then, I've kind of started to realize that I didn't fully understand the finale. I didn't understand the show. I personally took the wrong, just the wrong impression from it. And Josh he said he'd watched it, but then he didn't really remember watching the last 3 seasons, I think, of it. So he's the one who made us do the rewatch. And I love spoilers and I love reading reviews and recaps.
So do I.
Yeah. So like, that's like a whole nother thing. Cause we just watched a Marvel movie for the first time. The Civil War one. And I was like Wikipedia-ing it the whole time we were watching that. But that's what
North
I do.
Wins is in the end.
Sansa Stark. No, but as we were watching it, I was reading the Wikipedia plot and then for Lost, and then going and reading all these recaps and reviews and all the theories. And I kind of just started to realize like how much I personally had missed. And so I'm now changing my conclusion on the show. I used to be one of the people who thought it was horrible and the ending was the worst ending I'd ever seen in television. And now I think it's a brilliant show and it's worth watching, but I do think a rewatch is required. So if you're going to watch it, you're going to have to watch it twice.
Well, I think you definitely need to write something about that, because I think it would probably be like fairly get some traction with, you know, in among the kind of TV, you know, geeks out there. But anyway, so
the experts.
Yeah. Well, Jim, thank you so much for being on today, chatting with us, with gabbing with the gals.
Did he leave us?
Oh, I think he probably muted.
Oh, no, I'm still here. Sorry.
Yeah, he muted his mic.
Meeting.
I'm normally editing and producing our podcast. Sometimes I'm the guest, sometimes I'm the host, but it's always good to just be on a podcast where you don't have to edit or produce it. And it's always great to hang out with the both of you.
Yeah, well, I'm lucky that I'm supposed to be learning more of this editing and producing stuff, but I'm so grateful that I have like the actual editor and producer in the same house with me, so I can just be like, I really need your help. So, but and Sarah, thank you so much for filling in for Kim.
Thanks for having me. You know, your podcast, I like always refuse to do them, and you're the only one who always gets me to come on. Always.
Yes, because I just say, pretty please, Sarah. But no, Jim, I forgot to, where can everybody find you on the internet?
Please don't. you can find me at thebulwark.com, where I write occasionally and spend most of my time editing stories and podcasts. And you can subscribe to my newsletter there, which comes out every day in the afternoon. And if you really want the full experience, you can follow me on Twitter, JimSwiftDC. I don't have a Patreon, not yet, but I was thinking of creating a paid newsletter called Subtweet that would explain all of the dramas of Twitter to people who are smart enough. God. Use it. Do you guys think there's an audience for that?
I saw somewhere in an email thread somewhere that they said that people should really have to send their inquiries about writing as a new person on a site with a synopsis of their latest Twitter scandal.
Twitter is high school, so I think you would definitely have an audience for that.
Yeah.
If Twitter's high school, what's it like if you went to an all-boys school?
Oh, God.
Oh, God. I don't know.
Deep questions here on the right side.
Sarah, where can everybody find you?
I am on Twitter at Sarah M. Quinlan. And you can also find me at Arc Digital.
Alrighty, and as always, you can find Kim, who is out, wish her the best at Southern Keeks on Twitter, and you can find her at Arc Digital and at the Washington Examiner. You can find me on Twitter at Andrea and Ruth, and also if you want to subscribe to the Arc Digital newsletter, I curate and get that out twice a week. So we will see you on another episode of the Right Side Podcast. Bye.